Chapter 1.
Theater!
Free speech means the right to shout theater in a crowded fire. Abby Hoffman. Prior to her March 17, 2013 concert at Yoshi's Jazz Club in San Francisco, my knowledge of Michelle Schock was pretty sparse, pretty typical. I loved Anchorage and Come a Long Way, and I had heard her in concert back in the 90s. I remember that she performed her whole set, plus an encore, and then told us that we could stay or go, she wouldn't be offended, but that she had a few new songs she'd like to try out on us. "Give me 15 minutes," she said. She was back in 5 and played at least 6 more songs. I stayed, happy to move closer to the stage, and even though I was dead tired, I hung on, somehow feeling that I had entered into an unspoken covenant, watching those who left with sad eyes. The songs were lovely, but I was more impressed with her passion, and I liked how she broke the rules. We got bonus tracks that night, and in an odd way, felt like co-conspirators. A skeptical friend said, "Maybe she's making up for last time." Apparently, on her last visit to Kansas City, the promoter tried to get away with an in-house PA system for a lectern mic, and Michelle flat-out waited until decent equipment arrived. Some people stayed, some left. Some admired her standards, and some found them absurd. That was the first time I took her side in an argument. The second time was March 18, 2013, when I read an online San Francisco Bay Guardian headline, "Alt-folk singer Michelle Schock goes on homophobic rant. Yoshi says she won't be back." The show was supposed to be the first stop of her 2013 Roadworks Celebrating 25 Years of Short, Sharp Schock tour. Instead, it was the only stop. Move a little closer to the campfire, and I'll see if I can explain why. The previous night, Michelle presented the audience with a dialectic, truth versus reality. The stage had been set with 3 large paintings by artist David Willardson. On the left was Georgia O'Keeffe's portrait, in the center was Michelle's, and on the right was Frida Kahlo's. Frida and Georgia's portraits were framed backwards. That is, they were seen by looking through the backs of the frames. Over her own portrait, at the top, was a word balloon with the Twitter handle, @mshocked. And at the bottom, "Join the conversation." It was clear, before the performance started, that Twitter was part of the show. Tonight, the audience would choose the direction of the performance while remaining unaware of the topic. In essence, the audience was seeing a preview. The artistic subject for the evening was not yet revealed. When Michelle walked on stage, she turned each of the frames around to unveil 3 bold words. On the other side of O'Keeffe's picture was the word "truth." Behind her own portrait, the word "versus," and opposite Kahlo's was the word "reality." These 3 words remained as the backdrop for the entire evening. Michelle didn't explain the dichotomy. She told me that after warming to the audience's welcome, she had set them at ease despite her own apprehension, and then asked for a volunteer from the audience to perch downstage on a nearby stool and operate her Twitter feed from her iPhone. She suspected that most of her audience prefers Facebook to Twitter. An audience member, Matt at the Guapo, volunteered to come on stage. She then solicited votes from the audience for their preference, truth or reality. She said it was pretty ad hoc, with no formal methodology for determining votes. At the Guapo reported that it was a vote for truth. And so Michelle commenced playing the entire album, Short, Sharp, Shocked, in sequence, soup to nuts, from When I Grow Up and Hello Hopeville, Memories of East Texas and Making the Run to Gladewater, to Anchorage and Graffiti Limbo, If Love Was a Train, Making Trouble for the VFD, through to the ghost track, Fog Down. There was little unscripted conversation between herself and the audience. At one point, she mentioned her relief that the audience seemed pretty happy with her only playing music without much talking. Perhaps things might have turned out differently had they chosen reality from the start. One reason I was so nervous at the beginning of the show is because if the vibe went a certain way, you have no idea how belligerent people have become about bootlegging you, even when you ask, insist, or adamant about not recording. Michelle told me later that if they had chosen reality, she would have stepped behind her portrait and done the entire show from there, or until the audience complained sufficiently. Bootlegs had now become a point of serious friction between her and her audience, and Michelle was intent on holding a long overdue conversation on the topic of content theft. Authentic conversations during performances were no longer viable, hijacked as they were by social media. Thus, reality was certain to include strife and dissension. Michelle explained, "That's one reason I was so relieved when they requested truth at the beginning, because it meant just sing, don't talk, which I haven't done ever, a point of artistic pride, since I feel that most singers can sing, but a true artist is an entertainer who engages and communicates with an audience. And I wasn't sure if it would seem boring to just sing and not talk, but the audience was pretty comfortable with it." When she finished, the audience was satisfied. The show was essentially over, and Michelle told them that if they were still there when she returned, she would play a few more songs. What happened when she returned on stage for the encore was no less than Luke Skywalker's blowing up of the Death Star. Michelle had admitted apprehension at the beginning of the show, and this is why. She knew the rules of the game had changed, and her refusal to settle on one side of the fence or the other was now the worst thing a public figure could do. And so that's exactly what she did. "The challenge," she said, "was to hit the nerve center and escape before it imploded." A tweet from Michelle Schacht to Free State, Kansas. "SF is the nerve center of the Death Star killing our culture. A voracious appetite for free content is starving creativity." Michelle says that her true intent that night was not to start a God versus gays debate, but to challenge her Bay Area audience as Silicon Valley citizens for their complicit role in the abuse of artists' rights. Any topic they tweeted would get the job done. For me, San Francisco is the quintessential symbol of a gay mecca of liberal thought and action. But for Michelle, it's the epicenter of content theft and ad-sponsored piracy, Google HQ and Singularity U. Her quest was to pick up the gauntlet that had been thrown down via YouTube a few months prior, at the end of her 2012 Roadworks Rockupy tour. If you've followed the story on Twitter, you know that the majority of Michelle's posts have been on the topic of content theft, which she refers to as copyfight. You may have also seen the video she calls "The Shot Heard Round the World," a short 15-second bootleg of Michelle's opening remarks while in concert in Tampa. 3 days before the Tampa concert, a few audience members in Asheville walked out after Michelle's remarks that President Barack Obama had reneged on campaign promises to stand up for whistleblowers like Bradley, now Chelsea Manning. A few days after, when the Tampa video was published on YouTube by Julie Latimer with the brief description, "This is all I got before she asked us not to record," Michelle wondered, why would someone post a 15-second video unless they were trying to send a message that they could bootleg my shows with impunity, citing a false fair use syllogism? YouTube refused to honor Michelle's demand that the bootleg be taken down. Instead, they only fanned the flames. Their justification? The video contained no music, just talking. Why make such a big deal out of such a little video? Well, to someone who's been engaged in fighting content thieves since her very first album, the implications are earth-shattering. To Michelle, the de facto redefinition of intellectual property by Google is evidence of an authoritarian role in defining art. So, melody and composition are intellectual property, but free verse and improvisation aren't copyright protected? Does this apply to a comedian doing stand-up? A poet reciting verse? It's anyone's best guess, and a no man's land where free speech goes to die. For most fans, this IP, or intellectual property issue, is irrelevant. For a professional performance artist, it's more than limiting. Content theft is not a new issue, not for Michelle, or for authors, journalists, photographers, filmmakers, composers, designers, or even Etsy crafters. In fact, Michelle's debut album, The Texas Campfire Tapes, was a bootleg that was positioned on UK independent charts before she even knew the record existed. At the age of 24, her first experience with the music business involved suing a former manager, label, agent for the rights to her own stolen music. Now that fans can show up, videotape live performances, and enabled by YouTube, publish them as bootlegs, even bits of conversation and offhand comments entice them to record. This causes the relationship between artist and fan to become fraught with mistrust. Despite her reputation for commentary during concerts, some in the audience claimed they were unaware that she doesn't draw a simple line between songs and statements during a performance. This video is pivotal, and it is a typical example of Google's daily violation of DMCA copyright protection. And 100 million pending takedown requests is a very lucrative little limbo. As Google becomes more monolithic, "Don't Be Evil" becomes increasingly elusive. Now, even seasoned employees are calling them out for falsifying metrics and ripping off publishers just as their accounts hit a particular payment level. The magic number seems to be somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000, unless the account has an elite status. Michelle said she had sensed a shift in the cultural current, perhaps due to Twitter more than Facebook. She said social media seemed to foster a lurking, mobbing presence at shows. It never used to be like that or feel like that. Even if people were just there out of curiosity, it never felt like they were conspiring with each other as antagonists at my shows. Something changed. Was it a backlash from her involvement with Occupy Fight's foreclosures? From her refusal to throw the Christian community under the bus? From a segment of the gay community still obsessively speculating whether she was gay? From her defiant stance towards bootlegging and content theft? Or was it simply that the social media system was primed and ready to capitalize on any hot story? You tell me. All Michelle knew was that something was amiss, and she was heading directly into the storm. She told me that she had prepared herself emotionally, financially, and spiritually for what she planned to do, but no amount of preparation could have buffered what actually transpired during the encore. Taking her cue from the audience, via Twitter, she read aloud some of the random tweets she had received before the encore to guide the topic of conversation. Michelle, hey, y'all want to hear some of what y'all just said? All right, let's see, where do I start? Reading tweets. After reading a few requests for songs and a comment thanking her for her shout-out to Strike Debt, hashtag life or debt, she ran across this tweet lurking at the back door. Tweet. Reality could include some gospel. Audience laughter. At this point, Michelle asked the audience if there were any other lovers of the invisible man out there saying, this is sincere. The two things that I'm passionate about, y'all. I love me some Jesus, and I love liberation. And I did not know how I was going to come to San Francisco and authentically represent the... But she left that thought hanging and read a few more tweets before saying, truth be damned, let's go with reality, just for a while. And I know I talk a lot, and apparently at some point it's either going to put me in a coma or cause me to have cancer and a premature death, but I really can't help it now. I've dedicated 25 years to becoming more and more authentic, and I'm told that that has value in the current culture, but I'm not 100% convinced. Laughter. But there's no turning back. I've been practicing for quite a while. But I was in a prayer meeting yesterday, and you gotta appreciate how scared folks on that side of the equation are. I mean, from their vantage point, and I really shouldn't say there because it's mine too, we are nearly at the end of time. And from our vantage point, we're going to be, facetiously, I think maybe Chinese water torture is going to be the means, the method, offhanded, flippantly. Once Prop 8 gets instated, and once preachers are held at gunpoint and forced to marry, in a character voice, the homosexuals, I'm pretty sure that will be the signal for Jesus to come on back. Audience. What? Michelle, you just said you wanted reality. If someone would be so gracious as to please tweet out, Michelle Schock just said from stage, God hates faggots. Would you do it now? At this point, the audience realized that reality was going to include more than just gospel. The demonstration had begun. A woman in the back of the room yelled, "You can have your show, Michelle. I think some people got it." Michelle ignored the heckler and joked, "Just adjusting my bra strap. Nothing worth getting in a froth about." Audience, "What?" Michelle, "You're confounded. Matt, you might need to get back up here." Matt, at the guapo, "There's gonna be a lot of talking about that one." Michelle, "I ain't scared. I ain't scared. This is not a tribunal. This is one woman's opinion. And it's..." Audience, "Fun?" Michelle, "It's fun. It's a lot of fun. I am so committed to loving each and every soul in this room tonight that I could not come here and ignore you. I could not come here and pretend that I was above the conversation, and I couldn't pretend that I was beneath it either. I had to join it. Thank you for that one hand clap. I do that all the time. Matter of fact, I was in church a couple of... You know it's come to a bad point when the white girl is sitting in a black church, I'm clapping, and the man in front of me turns around and goes, 'That's irritating.'" Audience laughter. "Hallelujah. I'd like to play you some songs, but..." Woman, "I hope you get wise, Michelle, and realize that there's nothing to fear. There's nothing to fear. Everybody is deserving of your... whoever your God is, his love." Michelle, "Can I respond to that off the microphone?" Woman, "You can respond to that on the microphone." Michelle moved away from the mic. Her voice was loud and angry now. But ironically, what she said was not nearly as controversial. She shouted, "I am sick
of Christians filled with hypocrisy, hiding behind the symbol of a cross.
There's a moment of quiet just after a demolition artist presses the plunger. If you've ever watched an implosion, you know this. You wait, everyone waits. And you think for a minute that nothing is going to happen. And then, from within the building, you hear heavy explosions laden with brick and stone. You see dust starting to puff out of windows. Walls begin to crumble. And if you're the little jackrabbit who hutches in that condemned building, you feel the ground shake under your paws, and you hightail it out of there as fast as you can. If you know her music, now is the time to think. Jump, little rabbit, jump. But she didn't jump. Assuming she had enough time to work the conversation around content theft and the audience's complicity, Michelle ignored the heckler and continued conversing with the audience. She recited a Bible verse in Spanish. She played another song. The woman, emboldened by the absence of any club staff or security on this St. Patrick's Eve, marched from the back of the room down to the front of the stage to insist that Michelle explain herself. Exasperated, Michelle chose not to take the prosaic route and deconstruct her motives then and there. Instead, she let the content thieves capture their quarry. It was her admittedly perverse way to get their attention. The satirist's way of saying, this is what you do, and you're doing it right now. Rather than explain, she simply started singing. Leaving town while I still can, going down to the Yucatan to become a wanted man. It happens that fast. Saying my goodbyes, now mama, don't you go and cry. I've got to try to live without a past. The audience was confounded. Did they pay good money to be shocked like this? They had heard their dozen songs. It was time to go home, but clearly this was more than they had bargained for. Or was it? Was this just vintage shocked? Or should they be worried? Michelle had known full well that a recording would likely surface, and yet she let the spirit take her into deeper waters. When she ended the song, she said, don't bother to applaud. No, seriously, I don't think I can handle all the adulation right now. The same woman continued heckling her. Woman, you don't deserve it. Everyone should get up and leave. That was rotten. That was a horrible thing to say. If that's what you believe. Audience. Someone over there believes she means something different. Maybe you've been confusing. Michelle, I've got a question for y'all. It's a sincere question. How are you enjoying reality so far? Audience, not your reality. Michelle, sucks pretty much, doesn't it? Audience, oh yeah. Michelle, you can't have both. As the audience struggled to understand Michelle's meaning, one possibly drunk voice commandeered the conversation. The same woman walked up to the stage and yelled again, "Don't come to San Francisco saying that shit!" Michelle responded, don't come to San Francisco saying that shit. Where do I go to say that shit? Later, she laughed and said it was like telling her, don't go to the Death Star to blow up the Death Star. Clearly, Michelle and the heckler had different ideas about what constituted that shit. Indelible words from one indelible woman. The real move was so overt, it was covert. Michelle had flipped a double-fisted big bird at Big Data, and once the sound bites hit the fan, that shit spread like wildfire. Did she intend to blow up both her fans' complicit complacency and her own artistic status? Did she expect such fallout? Had she come to San Francisco with a message of hate? She had said she loved everyone in the room. But somehow these words were lost. In fact, the heckler practically begged for another round as she yelled, "Come on, show it! Show your true self, come on!" and shoved another patron who asked her to quiet down. The audience started calling for someone to get the heckler out of there, but bouncers were still nowhere in sight. At this point, screaming Mimi and her table left, followed by another table of concertgoers. A few other people filtered out, but the house lights hadn't come up yet. The audience was certainly part of the show, and the show wasn't quite over. Michelle said that during the last 23 minutes, no more than a third of the audience was involved in the leaving or drifting, with another third hoping that it was just a reality drama, and the other third wondering what the hell was going on. But once the story hit the blogs, it was reported as a mass walkout, and thus began a cascade of fingers in my ears, I can't hear you, de facto censorship. Lost was the chance to explain. Lost was the possibility for nuance. Just as Michelle had anticipated, the entire performance had indeed been bootlegged, and the encore portion published on SoundCloud, courtesy of the San Francisco Bay Guardian. The 23-minute bootleg audio was also later published on YouTube. This version provides some context within the encore section of the show, but was later cut and pasted into shorter, less comprehensible clips. Context cuts both ways, which would be pretty funny if it weren't so sad. The revised 7-minute version of the bootleg was just talk. No music. It cuts out an entire song and amusingly jumps from Michelle reciting John 3:16 in Spanish, "Porque de tal manera amo Dios al mundo," to the heckler saying, "That's a terrible thing to say." When Michelle says, "My words were taken out of context," understand this. Context extends beyond just the words a person says. In this situation, the context has to include not only the framed words truth versus reality on the stage, invisible to anyone who attended the concert virtually by way of the bootleg, but also the entire concert itself, and an understanding of the events that led up to this copy fight. Michelle believes when a performance is recorded, it flattens out the truth and gives you something without nuance. It removes a crucial player in any performance, the real-time response of a real audience. Here's my challenge to you. I think your job as an audience is the same as your job as a news consumer. To try to find the truth behind the reality show facade. Your job, as you listen to this audiobook, is to try to piece together 1,000 media-filtered, contextless facts. Your integrity will have to be your guide. ¶¶